This is DW News live from Berlin. The Taliban order boys to return to secondary schools, but girls are not permitted to resume their studies. With the Taliban back in control, many girls fear their dreams of an education could be shattered. Also, coming up on the show, it's the second day of voting in parliamentary elections in Russia. But with opposition candidates detained or barred from running, many feel the result is a foregone conclusion. Hello, I'm Claire Richardson. A warm welcome to the show. As the Taliban seized control of more and more regions of Afghanistan, many women and girls began to fear for their futures. The country's new rulers now no longer allow boys and girls to attend schools together. Secondary schools are also off limits to girls, and it's unclear when or if the Taliban will allow them to return.
For now, only boys may attend Kabul's Istiqlal High School. The doors of secondary schools are now only open to boys and male teachers. Girls are no longer allowed inside. So far, the Taliban have not explicitly invited them back to school. You can see that the situation in Afghanistan is changing, but it won't exist forever. Once the government structure is established, we hope that girls will go back to school. Hope aside, it is still unclear whether the measure is only temporary and secondary girls' schools will simply resume operations later. Since the end of the Taliban's previous rule in 2001, the literacy rate of women has almost doubled, but it still remains one of the lowest in the world. The education of girls has shaped a generation. The education of boys may affect a family, but the education of girls affects society. We are very closely following the matter so that girls can resume their education and complete their studies. Only elementary schools like this one in Kabul are open to girls. But classes are held separately according to gender. Only men teach boys, and only women teach girls. These girls don't want Afghanistan's new rulers to prevent them from writing their own future. I want to become successful in the future for my country so I can make it prosper.
And let's get an update from journalist Franz Marti in Kabul, Afghanistan. Franz, what is the situation here? The Taliban have claimed things will be different this time from when they last ruled in the late 90s. But with these reports of girls not returning to secondary schools, what does this tell us about how credible they are?
I mean, in the end, it remains to be seen. However, there are echoes to the first emirate when the Taliban ruled in the late 90s and the early 2000s, because back then they also like restricted girl education or, for example, women working, with the explanation that the situation wouldn't allow that and that they would have to prepare schools or the workplace that there will be no problems. And it sounds pretty much the same as in the 90s now, and there it lasted like for the whole duration of the Taliban emirate for 5 years. That there are concerns that it might be the same again, and that the Taliban will again and again say they will eventually allow girls to secondary school, but practically not do that.
And we have also heard that the Taliban have set up a new ministry for the, quote, propagation of virtue and the prevention of vice. It's in a building that formerly housed the Women's Affairs Ministry. What is your assessment of that?
That the Taliban have set up such a ministry was expected. The propagation of virtue and the prevention of vice is usually what they did first, like in rural areas, to like implement their vision of a Islamic society. Which is that this vice police, so that they would do this in a national level. was to be expected. It was similarly to be expected that the Taliban will close down the Ministry for Women's Affairs. They might have said like that they will grant women their right in the Islamic context, but it was clear from the beginning that they won't see the need for a separate ministry. And then it was more or less logic. One ministry ceased to exist. The building was there. They put a new one in there. So one can't really say that one ministry was replaced by the other. It was just that the Taliban used the space that they had available. And the rest, as I said, how they did it was to be expected.
Journalist Franz Marty with an update for us from Kabul. Thank you so much for that. Let's turn our attention now to some of the other stories we are following for you at this hour. A few hundred demonstrators have gathered outside the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., amid a heavy police presence. They are voicing support for the people arrested in January when a crowd stormed the Capitol building to protest the presidential election results. Anti-lockdown protesters have clashed with police in Australia's two biggest cities. In Melbourne, police used pepper spray and arrested over 200 people. Both Melbourne and Sydney are in hard lockdowns as Australia struggles to contain a third wave of coronavirus infections. In Paris, the Notre Dame Cathedral is finally stable enough for artisans to start rebuilding it. It took over 2 years to secure the structure following a devastating fire in 2019. Authorities aim to reopen the cathedral by 2024, when Paris will host the Olympic Games. And it's a day two of voting in Russia's parliamentary election, but the results are seen as a foregone conclusion. Opposition figures have been detained or barred from running, clearing the way for President Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party. The polling stations are open for 3 days, and there have already been allegations of voting irregularities. And for the first time, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe has not sent election observers. It says limits on the numbers of its staff would make its job impossible to do. The authorities have also made it hard for opposition candidates to run their campaigns. And I'm joined now in the studio by DW reporter Pablo Folly Elias, who is monitoring this story for us. Thanks for joining us here, Pablo. How serious are these allegations of election irregularities?
Right, well, independent election monitors Golos registered close to 2,000 instances of fraud on Friday's first day of voting. Now, there have been practices like dropping large numbers of votes into the ballot box. We're going to see some images come in now in what's believed to be St. Petersburg. We've even slowed them down so you can see actually that this person here is putting in a large number of votes into this ballot box. It was posted by Irina Fatianova. Now, she's a opposition figure, jailed opposition figure, Alexei Navalny's former chief of staff in the city. She was disqualified from running in the city, but she's been monitoring the vote there. There have also been reports of voters being bussed from polling station to polling station, so they've been voting multiple times. And there have also been, there's the potential that this could outrage Russians, obviously. But also we've seen in the past that protests have taken place. Whether they're going to take place this time is unclear. It's possible they're not going to be as big as they have been, say, a decade ago. The reason for that is because there has been quite a lot of, intimidation of people voting for the opposition within Russia. That's according to many reports.
In that video we saw, the man could barely fit all those ballots into the slot in the box. Now, Pablo, many allies of the jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny are, of course, barred from this race. But the allies who he supports in this election are hoping to undermine the ruling party anyway using an app, an online how-to-vote app. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. Well, it's called a smart voting app. Now, it shows how likely an opposition candidate is to win a particular race or how likely they are to perhaps even unseat a candidate from the ruling United Russia candidate. So then, of course, it gives the information to those people who want to vote for perhaps an opposition candidate. Now, originally, the Smart Voting app was available on Apple and Google, but then it was taken down from there on Friday. That was when the elections began. The tech giants said that they had to pull it down because of Russian laws, which didn't allow it to be there. Navalny's organizations are designated as extremist, and the organizations were saying that the app was essentially then constituting interference in the elections. Navalny's organizers say, on the other hand, that what they were doing was caving in to Kremlin blackmail.
Now, Pablo, I do also want to ask you about one case we've heard reports of, one particularly infamous election race in St. Petersburg, where apparently three doppelgangers are running.
That's right. We're going to see some images, too, because it's much clearer then to see exactly what we mean by this. Now, the three candidates are all called Boris Vishnevsky.
No.
Now, we'll refer to one Boris Vishnevsky as the original Boris Vishnevsky. He's an opposition politician, and he's battling against the two other candidates. Now, in a tweet, Vishnevsky, we'll call him the original one, complained that the spoiler candidates are apparently, they even changed their appearance to confuse voters at the polls. Now, the original Vishnevsky spoke to DW and he said, what kind of person renounces the name that their parents gave them and changes it to their political opponent's name? All on their boss's orders. So, really, this is something that we don't often see. It's really incredible. And if you see it there, obviously there's a similarity between the three Vishnevskys.
Incredible and brazen. Pablo Foley Elias for us in the studio. Thank you so much for that update.
Thanks, Claire.
And the world's first female chess grandmaster is suing Netflix over its hit series, The Queen's Gambit. Nona Gaprindashvili says a reference to her in the fictional show is grossly belittling. In the final episode, a character claims the Soviet player had never faced men in chess competition. In fact, she had played many over her career and beaten them.
Among all those men.
I don't mind it.
The Queen's Gambit, an international mega-hit set in the 1960s about a fictional female chess champion competing in a male-dominated world where she has to fight to be taken seriously. Back in the real 1960s, Nona Gaprindashvili was alive and playing chess in the Soviet Union. She fought her way to the top. She says The Queen's Gambit has made a mockery of her when it claimed, in its final episode, that she never played men. Now she's suing for $5 million.
Netflix thinks this is just a harmless story and doesn't contain defamatory statements and doesn't damage her name, reputation and honor. We believe this completely disregards her whole career and achievements, and we do not understand why.
Gaprindashvili is now 80 and is revered in her home country of Georgia. As the world's first female grandmaster, she broke through a glass ceiling, defeating dozens of men. In one tournament, she played 28 men at the same time.
She made the breakthrough for women's chess and successfully participated in men's tournaments. This was the biggest part of her career. She was very insulted, of course. The TV series had huge influence, this episode in particular, and many people have asked her why she was treated this way.
Netflix has not commented, but has reportedly said it will vigorously defend the case.
Well, we can turn our attention now to the Bundesliga, and Saturday's action saw champions Bayern host newly promoted Bochum, and the gulf in class was clear as the Bavarians stormed to a 7-0 victory. Serge Gnabry scored the pick of the goals in the first half. A quick-fire passing move that began deep in Bayern's own half ended with Thomas Müller supplying Gnabry, and his international teammate did the rest. It puts Bayern back on top of the Bundesliga, at least until Sunday night. But Saturday's early Bundesliga games have finished, so let's take a look at the results so far this weekend. As we saw, Bayern thrashed Bochum. Augsburg beat Gladbach. Bielefeld against Hoffenheim ended goalless, as did Mainz versus Freiburg. Now on Friday, Hertha Berlin beat Fürth. Saturday's late game between Cologne and Leipzig is underway right now. And the pick of Sunday's three games sees Eintracht Frankfurt travel to Wolfsburg, who have started the season in blistering form. Well, Venice is known for its canals, its food, but now it has a giant floating fiddle. The Violin of Noah is a 12-meter-long boat in the shape of the popular stringed instrument. It was launched on the Venetian canals this weekend with a group of musicians playing on board. The boat is dedicated to those who have died from COVID-19. stirring tribute the Venetian way. You're watching DW News from Berlin. Stay tuned for Reporter coming up next, which looks at how less than 2% of German lawmakers are under the age of 30. I'm Claire Richardson in Berlin. There is, of course, always more on our website, dw.com, or you can check us out on social media at DW News.